Welcome to free conference. Please input your access code followed by the pound key. At the tone, please record your name for announcement to the call organizer and then press the pound key to enter your conference.
Erica Jones, Center for Disability Rights, Rochester.
You will now enter the conference.
Mark Derry.
Hey, it's Terry. How are you doing?
MK Carl.
Mark, are you on the line?
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know if we're on mute or not. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. I discovered that mute is star 6 star.
What was that? Was it 11:15?
Yeah.
No,
that's 30.
Ah.
This could be 15 minutes early.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, everyone. This is Jessica Lehman. How's everybody doing?
You are now muted.
Good. I'm having difficulty trying to hear everybody.
Hi, this is Jennifer Mizrahi from Accessibility.
I apologize for being a couple minutes late, having a couple technical issues with our call this morning, but hopefully things will go smoothly. I'll just give people another minute or so to join, and then we'll get started.
Thank you.
Is Diane Coleman on the call?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great. Are you on the chat today, Diane?
Yes, I am.
wonderful. Thanks. And do we have Derek and Michelle on?
Derek here.
Yes, this is Michelle.
Hi, Derek. Great.
You might want to let people know that muting and unmuting are done with *6*. I just figured it out.
Thank you for telling people that. Yeah, one of our problems is I can usually mute everyone, and I don't think I can do that on the call today, unfortunately.
But
so if everybody is not speaking,
six,
to hit *6*. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started. Thanks to those who have muted. Hopefully we will be okay without our usual controls. So my name is Jessica Lehman. I work for San Francisco Senior and Disability Action in California. And welcome to the Organizers Forum, which is a national call designed to support community organizing in the disability rights movement and various disability communities around the country. For those who are joining for the first time, we'll tell you a little bit about it. This is a project of the National Disability Leadership Alliance, which is a coalition of national cross-disability organizations. And my co-chair in this project is Diane Coleman. Diane, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. I'm Diane Coleman. I'm with Not Dead Yet. And our organization is one of 15 national organizations run by people with disabilities that serve on the steering committee of the National Disability Leadership Alliance. So what's unique about us compared to many other disability groups is that all 15 member groups of the steering committee are run by people with disabilities ourselves.
And to keep this call accessible, we do have captioning, and there's a chat window on that website. The information for the link for the website should be in the email that you got about this call. And so if you'd like to participate that way, Diane is on in that chat. And so if you prefer to type in questions or comments rather than saying them when we open it up to dialogue, Diane can read those out on the call. So the Organizers Forum, I mentioned, is about supporting community organizing. And so we have a different topic every month. It's always the third Tuesday of the month at the same time. And we're always looking for new topics, so let us know if you have ideas. We recognize, though, that 1 hour is not enough to get into a lot of these topics.
And I need to talk to somebody.
I'm going to remind people to hit *6 if you're not talking.
No,
thank
it's
you.
*6*. Sorry.
I think it's *6*, actually.
No, it's
and
*6*.
Okay. So in addition to the calls, we have a couple other ways for all of us to participate and continue the dialogue. We do have a Facebook page. It's Organizers Forum. So if you haven't gone to that page, please do that, click like, and make any comments there. And then we also have a Yahoo group. It's really easy to join. You go to yahoogroups.com, And in the search box, type organizers forum, all one word, and just click join. And there's not a lot of traffic there. But we do invite everyone who's on this call, either during the call or afterwards, go on the Facebook page or go on the Yahoo group and make a quick note about something that stood out to you or a question you have or another idea you may have that didn't come up, so that we're able to share that a little more widely. Let's see. Am I missing anything, Diane? I think I got the basics. Oh, you know what I forgot? This is really important. So I'm sorry that we have a different number, a call-in number today, and I'm not able to mute everyone the way I normally can. So this is even more important than usual. Please do not put us on hold. We've had trouble with hold music in the past or background conversations. If you need to step away, just hang up. You can always call right back in. And please do keep your phone muted for as much of the call as possible, except when we're talking. So on that note, it's already 9 minutes past the hour. Let's jump into our topic for today, which is voting. Thanks to Mark Johnson and others for the great idea. We are a little more than a year out from the 2016 presidential election. And, of course, there's a lot of interest in getting the candidates talking about disability issues, all different kinds of issues. Plus, I think this year and every year, a lot of us in local communities may have ballot initiatives or local candidates, and we want to make sure that people with disabilities are getting out to the polls and having a voice. So we have two designated speakers today to talk about it, and I know there's a lot of other people on the call with a lot of experience in this issue of mobilizing people with disabilities to vote, and so we're looking forward to a lot of good dialogue with everyone. So our two speakers, we have Derek Weatherell, who's at Paraquad in St. Louis, and he's the systems organizer there. Derek supports the Coalition for Truth and Independence, which is a coalition of neighborhood-based civil rights groups with a disability lens. He also advises People First of St. Louis. He works on anti-bias policing, and he oversees their Get Out the Vote GOTV campaign. We also have Michelle Bishop from the National Disability Rights Network, and Michelle is the Disability Advocacy Specialist for Voting Rights. She's been with NDRN since 2013, and she provides training and technical assistance to the Protection and Advocacy Network around the country regarding voting rights and access for voting with disabilities. So on that note, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle to get us started.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us. Can everyone hear me okay? I'm hoping, because I just took myself off mute. Okay. So my name is Michelle Bishop. I work for NDRN, or the National Disability Rights Network. Because I am who I am and I work for who I work for, the very first thing you're going to get from me is, of course, a completely shameless plug for the PNA Network. NDRN is the National Membership Association for the PNAs. If you're not familiar with them, there is a PNA in each of the 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, all of the U.S. territories. It might in your state be called the PNA. It might be called Protection and Advocacy, Protection and Advocacy Services, or it might very well be called Disability Rights, such as Disability Rights California or Disability Rights Ohio. So there is a PNA in your state, much like a Center for Independent Living. They're established by Congress to protect the rights of people with disabilities. The PNAs focus on providing legal advocacy services and are the largest provider of legal advocacy services for people with disabilities in the United States. Each of the PNAs has a mandate under the Help America Vote Act to run what we call PAVA, or the Protection and Advocacy for Voter Access Program. So not only is there a PNA in your state or territory, but they are actively working on the disability vote. So if you're not familiar with your PNA, they could make a fantastic partner in doing this kind of work for you. Please feel free to contact me. We'd be happy to give anyone my contact information if you want to build a relationship there or if there's anything that I can do to help. Okay. Now that that completely shameless plug is out of the way, why are we talking today about the disability vote? I've been doing this work for over 10 years now, and in so much of the work that I do, I hear us talk about the vote in terms of personal empowerment. And I think there is a lot to be said for that. I think that working in the disability rights community, if we're not concerned about the personal empowerment of people with disabilities who experience so much disenfranchisement in their lives, that we're doing something wrong. And I think the vote is very much a tool for personal empowerment. Going and having your say and wielding your voice in the political process should very well feel empowering. I think there's a lot to be said for that. But I think the reason this call is important today is because empowerment and power are not the same thing. And while we're very good at talking about empowerment, I don't know that we've traditionally, as a disability rights, civil rights movement, been that successful in talking about power. There are two stories that come to mind in the work that I've done over the years around the disability vote that I think illustrate this. I'm a Missourian by nature, so these stories come from on-the-ground grassroots disability vote work I was doing in Missouri at the time. The first was after the Help America Vote Act passed, when our states and our local election authorities were required to implement new accessible voting technology that would expand access to the vote for all voters. And we actually came in contact with a local election authority, a county clerk, who told us that they wanted to put the accessible voting equipment, the touchscreen machines, in the toilet where they belonged. And this was said openly to us. The second story, and something that's stayed with me all this time, years later, some of the folks that were in our coalition were talking to a state legislator about an issue that was really important to the disability community. Given that it's Missouri, it was probably related to healthcare. And that legislator said, I'm going to vote however my constituents want me to vote around this issue. And some of the folks who worked at the Center for Independent Living were there. Some of their participants who were also live in that district were there. They said, we need you to vote this way on this piece of legislation. The meeting went well. When the vote came down, things did not go in favor of the disability community, and this particular legislator did not vote the way that the disability community would have needed. And when they went back to the legislator and said, what happened? The legislator said to them directly, I voted how my constituents wanted me to. You're not my constituents. This was an organization and their participants that were located in the home district of that legislator who still felt very strongly that these people are not their constituents. And that was one of the most important lessons I think I ever learned in doing this work. I hope when you hear those stories that you are horrified that anyone would say this to us. It is horrifying that anyone would say this to us in that these stories are no more than 10 years old. They've been since the passage of the Help America Vote Act. But I hope, like me, you're horrified for two very specific reasons. The first is that legislators and our election authorities can say things like this to us and get away with it because there were no repercussions. And we had no recourse for dealing with that. The second reason I hope you're horrified when you hear those kinds of stories is that the legislator who looked them in the eye and said, you're not my constituents, was right. He was absolutely correct. Because being a citizen doesn't make you a constituent. Being a voting age doesn't make you a constituent. Living in the district doesn't make you a constituent. What makes you a constituent is your vote. People with disabilities didn't turn out to the polls. People with disabilities didn't give that legislator his job. People with disabilities weren't going to take his job away. They were not the people to whom he was responsible to be accountable because they were not participating in the system. They were not playing the game. The vote is primarily a system of reward and punishment. If you meet the needs of your constituents, you get to keep your job. If you ignore the needs of your constituents, you're supposed to lose your job. That's how this works. That's power. The vote isn't necessarily just a tool of personal empowerment. The vote is a social act. The vote is a systemic act. When we vote together, we wield power. And in the disability community, we have to start talking about power and why we don't have enough of it. to protect the gains we've made and to push the bar even further, because we're not wielding the potential power that we have. I think it's so important that we start talking about the disability vote on a national level and have a conversation about how we can be doing this kind of work in every state and how we can be working together to get this done, because a powerful disability voting bloc is about building power to move the disability civil rights movement forward. I can't stress enough that's really what it comes down to. And so I hope that everyone is on the phone today thinking about power and thinking about how we can use the vote to propel the priorities of people with disabilities forward in the political process. My roots are in independent living. I've been in disability rights for a long time. And at every meeting, at every conference, I hear at least one person say, nothing about us without us. And that's true, and that's what's right. But no one has to respect nothing about us without us unless we make them. They can do anything without us if we're not going to wield the potential power that we have by participating in the process. And that's why I think the vote is so important. With that, I'm going to pass it off to Derek, because I know he has a lot of really amazing stuff to talk about today that I think would be really useful for everyone on the phone. But please feel free to ask me any questions. I'd be happy to talk to you about building bridges between different elements of the disability community and how we can start to work together on building the disability vote. And with that, Derek, please take it away.
Hi. How's everyone doing? So I'd start off with a story of kind of how I, the first time I ever kind of did a GOTV campaign, which was actually last year. So I've been at Paraquad for a little over a year now. And last year we were doing some more, we were going through a little bit of a transition phase. So I actually came into like GOTV work kind of by accident. It just kind of popped up like this needs to happen. I volunteered on GOTV campaigns in the past, so I had a little bit of knowledge, but not a whole lot. So what ended up happening, I had like 3 months before election day came around, and had a list of, you know, about 4,000 folks to call from our SIL. So luckily, we have a really great kind of institutional knowledge about voting and voter mobilization. So that was a help, but some things that we were able to do in this short amount of time was we were able to kind of get an online campaign going that was really fun for folks to plug into through social media, getting folks to like take pictures with like why they vote. We reached about a few thousand folks through that. We had a candidate meet and greet, so folks running had a chance to interface directly with voters in their districts. We were able to have a phone bank that reached almost that entire list. We hit about 4,500 voters, with a focus, of course, on infrequent voters, who we were able to contact three times with calls and a fourth time with the mailer. And then we were able to do a number of voter rights trainings with folks. So it was pretty hectic, but we were able to get a lot accomplished. But some things I learned through that, and this is like kind of why I want to kind of run through my maybe hectic first time doing this. So I think that there's probably a few folks, at least on the call, who might be doing this for the first time and may not have had the access to the great like institutional kind of knowledge that I had that Michelle was actually a part of building. So thank you. So some things that I learned. We'll start with, like, kind of some basic stuff, you know. Having a timeline and being able to plan with more than, like, 3 months. This is something that I've noticed with some organizations in our area with us, rich history that we have. GOTV is kind of like an afterthought. It's just a part of the year that, like, roll around, and then, you know, that time of year again where we start talking to folks about voting and maybe invite some folks out to events that we're having that talk about, like, the importance of voting. Something I learned through the tech time, it really, there's a lot of possibilities through during Get Out the Vote work, but you have to be mindful of that and plan ahead. So, like, getting a timeline together with when is your primary election, and kind of what needs to be done at different intervals throughout there. And kind of what events do you have, like, going on regularly with your organization, right? So we were doing we were able to kick off kind of things. We will be able to kick off things next year with a kind of recap and orientation for a recap of this past legislative session and orientation for, like, next year in Jefferson City, our campus. So being able to take advantage of things like that. So timelines are important. Phone calls. Personal. The more personal the contact, the better. We really emphasize phone calls here because it's very accessible and you can do it with low budget, regardless of your budget. We last year worked through a paper list, so you can always call. Calls are really awesome and much more effective than mailers or just the social media stuff, although you should have those things too. Which brings me to make sure that you are developing a message that ties to maybe an issue that's happening in your area. That was really effective last year when we were doing that. You can't just say, like, oh, you know, harness your power and go and vote. I think that folks are really propelled to vote whenever they, like, really feel it. They're angry, maybe. Kind of that fire at the belly will really drive the polls. Then kind of some maybe less, like, obvious things, right? Everyone on this call is, like, an organizer, so really want to take time to emphasize the potential that doing a GOTV in a really intentional way can really help build your base for community action. Or I know ISIP, Bullet Truth and Independence, is a neighborhood group. We were able to really build up those groups by being really kind of targeted in how we were doing GOTV. We set goals not just for the just like GOTV campaign of, like, hey, folks who want to reach with phone banks, how many, like, folks who want to reach with mailers, and at what time, so plotting all that out. But we're also really kind of, like, looking at where we're trying to develop groups. Are we talking to folks in that area? Are they showing up? Who's showing up to our events? Hopefully, invite folks to volunteer. So we were really intentional about kind of plotting out how is this not just help our the effectiveness of our Get Out the Vote, but how is this going to build our base of advocates, organizers, build our movement here in St. Louis. And then something that I encourage folks to do early on as you're, like, developing your timeline, really take an inventory of how your organization might be contacting, coming into contact with individuals already. Because that's something that we did a little bit late last year, but would have been really helpful to do earlier. And so it's kind of like you don't want to be doubling your work. So if you already have, like, folks coming to you, I know I work at a still, we have folks coming here all the time. We should be harnessing that kind of energy there and really having a good conversation with them about voting, the importance to vote, registering them or re-registering them. In our case, we have a lot of folks registered through the Missouri Disability Vote Project in the past.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless, the number you
talked. In addition to kind of doing an inventory of how you're coming in contact with them, you're going to want to, and something that we did do, I think, has really been helpful lately, is building a structure for how do we want to engage folks and bring them through a ladder of engagement that really builds their skills and allows them to be leaders.
This is Robert. Where's the from the city of Pasadena? May I speak with Mary, and I'll probably mess up her last name.
Interrupt, Derek. We hear somebody talking. Derek, if you don't mind, I did figure out how to mute everyone. So I'm going to do that and then have you hit start 6 and mute yourself. Sorry for the delay, but I think this will be better.
That is the elevator there at the building. She called me.
Okay. Okay, so Derek, go ahead and hit star 6 and we'll make sure we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Great. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry for the interruption.
No, that's fine. Building kind of structures to really amplify your effort so that you're not redoubling your effort every year. So we kind of continually engaged, like, folks who came out and, like, volunteered last year. This year we really include them in being a part of building our lobby days and stuff to keep them involved in continually building skills. So next year we're able to have, like, kind of phone bank officers that will really help build out your effort so it isn't as time-consuming for you, and you're actually building leadership that'll help, again, in your community advocacy and organizing work. It's really important that we build, are really intentional about developing leaders in the disability rights community. And so that'd be, like, kind of more micro level, like building a structure. Building coalitions in your area is super valuable and really mobilizing as many folks as we can there. There's a kind of study done where folks with disabilities are voting at 5.7% less of a rate than folks without disabilities. So, like, kind of nationally, we could add, like, 3 million votes if we're mobilizing everyone that's registered to the polls. So really trying to work with other organizations who might not be as driven to do GOTV efforts, which there are a lot of them in the disability community that primarily focus on services and don't really see GOTV as a service. So partnering with other organizations to really make sure that we're using all that potential energy that Michelle was kind of talking about and building power in our communities. So building a coalition, but also having a structure there that kind of develops leaders in other organizations so that, you know, if you leave, like, that can still continue. I know that was part of the bad fallout with Missouri Disability Vote Project, among other things, but that's something I've really learned to be really conscious of, is, like, spreading the wealth and developing folks, even outside of your organization, to continue this really important work. I've been a part of a lot of stuff to where folks, like, know people coming to, like, a phone bank, or you have volunteers coming out, and maybe they've done it a few times, so they'll kind of, like, skip over during a training. I always encourage folks, and this is kind of a nuanced thing, I guess, is, like, always do a lot of training within that, like, structure, whether it's facilitating meetings or train the trainer stuff. But I think it's really important to kind of keep the unity in what you're trying to do, your messaging, but also, like, it reinforces, like, good habits and, like, leadership development. So you can have, again, like, spreading the work around. Tool things are list enhancement and kind of phone banking services are really important to kind of look into. I had zero experience with any of this last year coming into this. But list enhancement kind of bring your list and cross-reference your list of folks with voter data in your area. This is really important in building a more targeted strategy that allows you to also, like, kind of tailor some messaging at critical intervals. So registering folks to vote, you'll know who you need to call. You're not calling a million people they're already registered, that you don't need to necessarily spend as much time doing. And with the phone banking, going back on the list enhancement, kind of like a rough estimate, and Shell probably has a much better estimate, is I've seen these anywhere between like 1,000 and 2,000 for a list enhancement. I think it might depend on your size a little bit. But calls, again, super important, make the calls. But there are a number of ways you can do that through online programs where you upload your list and run it through a predictive dialer. So they'll skip over like busy singles or if someone's not home, it'll just like skip to the next available caller, which really, if you're going to, for phone banking, is great. Whenever we were hand dialing everything last year, we wasted a lot of time and energy hitting bad numbers and folks that weren't home. So your volunteers will love you if you do a predictive dialer. So I guess that's all that I really have as far as like nuts and bolts kind of thing. There's kind of no replacement for doing a timeline and kind of sticking to that timeline. There's Ted Jackson, really great GOTV guy in California. I saw him speak at NICL this year, and he really emphasized, and I really like this, that time is the one resource that you can't get back. So build your timeline and make sure that you're really contacting folks. You really want to contact folks 3 to 5 times to really have an effective mobilization for folks. So, I think that's all that I have for that. So, take it back over to
Thank you, Derek.
Jessica.
Thank you so much, Derek. That was incredibly helpful to get a lot of those details out. Michelle, did you want to say anything else about kind of what things look like nationally, or did you want to open it up? Oh, and I'm sorry. Don't forget to hit *6 so we can hear you.
I think nationally this is a good time to seize the moment because we are on the horizon of a major national election. And so I think there's a good opportunity to generate some energy around this stuff. I would also caution that the smaller elections, midterm elections, primary elections where turnout tends to be lower are really good opportunities to really demonstrate the power of the disability vote. The lower the turnout that is, the bigger of a showing we can have and the bigger of an impact we can have. So we do tend to have these conversations a lot when there are major elections coming up, but this is really something that we should be thinking about all the time. We should be doing voter registration all the time. We should be doing voter education and voter turnout work around every election, even the little ones, because they can have a big impact and they're great opportunities for us as we're building a voting block. And that is the one thing I would stress. I mean, other than that, you know, if people have questions or things they want to talk about, we can go straight to that. I do some work around some federal level voting rights legislation. We've been doing a lot of work right now around the Voting Rights Act restoration. So if people do want to talk about that, I certainly can. But I don't want to necessarily cut into Q&A time with that either. So I will leave that up to all of you.
Great. Well, a huge thank you to Michelle and Derek before we move on for that really wonderful kind of outline of a lot of the pieces of voting and why this is so important to mobilize our vote. So with that, we will open it up to, I know there's folks on here that have a lot of other experience. If you want to share a little bit about what you're doing in your area, or if you have questions for our speakers or other participants, go ahead and hit *6 to unmute yourself, and then go ahead and share your question or comment.
Can you hear me?
Hi, this is Suzanne Erb from Pennsylvania, and I just
so we'll take Suzanne, and then we'll go back to the other person that tried to speak afterwards. Go ahead, Suzanne.
This is really exciting. This is the first time I've been in on this particular call, and I think I'm going to start attending this more often. I just want to make sure that everybody understands the importance of making sure that materials that get sent out are accessible, and this really does include all electronic-based materials as well. I've encountered so many times when I've been interested in a candidate and the website was not accessible, or at least not very usable, and it sort of put a bad taste in my mouth when I was trying to decide who to vote for. And so when we all send out information to our constituencies, I hope that everybody tries to remember to make sure that they're accessible to everybody.
Thank you for
Thanks
that.
So
this
much.
Is Jessica. That also reminds me, we do have some materials that I wanted to share with our Organizers Forum group. Ted Jackson in California, who Derek mentioned, has put together a NICL voting rights manual, and he made sure that is accessible in Word and PDF. And we'll put that on the NDLA website. It's disabilityleadership.org. And then we will also send that out on the Organizers Forum Yahoo group. We also have Bob Kafka, and I hope Bob is on this call. He has put together some great materials with the, Disability Voting Action Project of Texas, and it's called Rev Up, Rev for Register, Educate, and Vote, and a lot of good materials that I'm assuming people could kind of adapt for their own states. So, Bob, if you are there, can you weigh in on whether that's, I'm assuming you meant for us to share those through the network, is that right?
Yeah, I'm on, Jessica. Yeah, the one thing I just want to pick up on, you know, list development. Two things. One is, you know, voter registration is, you know, state by state, local by local, and each state has different, you know, rules, regulations. So it really needs to be some attempt to have some coordinating entity in a state, very much like the gentleman from St. Louis having a voting project, because, again, it without it sort of coming together with some coordination, it's difficult to, you know, convey that the disability vote is really there. Because we say it, but, you know, convincing policymakers is totally a different thing. But, so, you know, the Disability Voting Action Project came out of a project of Adaptive Texas, mainly not because ADAPT really wanted to do it, but, you know, nobody else had pulled it together. P&A was doing some good up on their website, but and they were doing some good education about the HAVA bill, but there really wasn't any, you know, specific, you know, register, educate, and get the vote out. So that's why we started it, and we're going to be transitioning that into a separate 501c4 organization because of just, you know, one, we didn't think it was for ADAPT to do, but two, as a 501c3, you know, we could do forums, we could do surveys, but if we get too close to political, we just didn't want to, you know, deal with that. But the big thing that we did in Texas, and it really is city by city, state by state, was that list development. I always thought that if we could get all the paratransit names and addresses and all the motor vehicle disability tags, we would have quite a bit of lists. And so in the past, we had gotten the paratransit list, which was public information in Texas, in Austin. And so we had that, but we wrote a letter to our Department of Motor Vehicle Bureau, and we got something back saying that you can't get their names, you can't get their addresses, you can't get the information that we had asked for. I didn't know that if you don't respond to them, that you accept it, that they have to refer it to the Attorney General. So to make this short, you know, the Attorney General said you can't get the names, you can't get the addresses, you can't get the email. But for $137, I got 1.2 million phone numbers of people in Texas that had the disabled tags, both the permanent and the temporary. And I then, like the gentleman from St. Louis, found out that there are companies that actually can match the phone numbers to the voter list, which is public information. And so the long and the short of it is we currently have like 650,000 people of the 1.2 million that we know have voted. So, you know, right now then we're trying to find funding to try to know what the next step is. But that's where we started the register, educate, vote, use your power concept because, again, even though there's a lot of talk about voter education, it really isn't like one major focus. Like in Texas, the Southwest Voter Project goes in, you know, mostly tries to register Hispanic voters. The Urban League does it for African Americans. You know, the Mental Health Association does it for people with mental health, but there really was no real focus, and that's where we are now, trying to, you know, do a big, you know, register. And in Texas, it's really pretty easy, even with after all is said about the voter ID stuff. But it's still just a postcard. So I'll stop there. And you know, Jennifer has our general materials, and I think getting the list, because I can remember way back when Becky Ogle was working for President Clinton. And when we talked about voting, you know, she said, well, what's your list? And, you know, even some of the best lists in the country have 5,000, 7,000. And in all honesty, parties, both Republican and Democrat, are looking in numbers. And so, you know, I would, you know, suggest that people just write their Department of Motor Vehicle, and you may be surprised that it might be public information, and you know, then you can go from there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bob. This is Jessica again. We really appreciate the feedback on the materials. There was a woman who was trying to get in a moment ago. Who was that?
I think I'm on. Am I still on?
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Thank you for waiting.
This is Helen Walsh. I run a project called Diverse Disability Media. I'm a digital media specialist as well as a public relations person. I do this in the community for over 10 years now. So my question is, Michelle and Derek. Derek, you had mentioned timelines being really important. It's also important for media, and I'm also speaking power, show your power, to engage that way as well to get people involved. So I'm kind of wondering, because usually I support the media, or you might have seen what I've done with the ADA Legacy Project, is provide that. Several years ago, many years ago, I did a test project on a way possibly to get people more encouraged to cover disability issues. I created a website that had all the candidates on it, and this was after the primary areas, during the primary areas, within a college system to see how students would respond. And it provided the information on the topics of disability and what the different candidates had been doing in regards to their involvement in disability areas. So I'm wondering if anybody has looked further into doing that. I know the test for me was successful. This was in a junior college area years back. So I'm wondering two things. What are we doing to utilize this cost-effective means of social media and ways of making it accessible to get the word out and the dialogue going now? Because timelines are important, very important, and we should have been on this a year ago. But right now, we still can do something. I would like to help where I can. I usually follow the media, as some people may know here. And I also activated as well with the different entities I know. So I'm wondering, in terms of the educational area of getting out vote, disability voting, if that's something that's in the pipeline. Hello?
Michelle or Derek, do you want to try to answer that? We're not hearing you. Are you muted, maybe?
Hello?
Yes, is that Derek?
Yes.
Great, go ahead.
I don't think I have much good read on if there's anything kind of nationally happening. But I mentioned kind of getting together a committee or coalition in your area to kind of work on this stuff. And the one that we are kind of working on here in St. Louis, that's actually our social media. Who's concerned is one of the topics that we're trying to come up with is like how can we actually like leverage Twitter and Facebook in a way that's effective to mobilizing folks. We've talked about doing that. I know that some groups have had actual like pretty good success using the advertisements on Facebook for identifying voters and mobilizing voters through social media, but I don't know if anything is happening around that nationally.
Good afternoon. This is Justin Chappell with Respectability. Jennifer,
hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear Ben and Jennifer. I was just going to ask if either of you wanted to speak. Go ahead.
This is Justin Chappell. Jennifer Mizrahi asked that I call in on behalf of Respectability USA. I wanted to give you all an update of what we are doing nationally. We are very focused on making sure that the disability vote is part of the 2016 presidential election. Thus far, we have been to the Republican debate and have had one-on-one interviews with a number of the presidential candidates, and we've had those interviews posted on our website and through our social media at respectabilityusa.org. And we're certainly looking for other organizations that would like to come with us to debates and to work with us in other things that we're doing. Jennifer, she would be on this call, but she's actually flying out to Iowa right now. We are hosting a meeting this evening of leaders in the disability community that live in Iowa, and we have about five or six of the presidential campaigns that have confirmed their attendance at this meeting to hear from the leaders of the disability community about the issues that are important to them, and certainly how a lot of those issues are directly related to employment. The other thing that we're certainly looking for that we would love help on is if a presidential candidate happens to come to your area and you have the opportunity to talk with them, you know, to pull out of your phone or, you know, whatever recording device, and with their permission, get their views on disability issues, and we would be more than happy to add that to our social media stream that we currently have of presidential candidates that have been giving their feedback. We're going to be doing meetings just like the one we did in Iowa tonight. We're going to be doing that as several other states as the presidential campaign progresses, and introducing the presidential candidates to leaders, disability community leaders in those states, as well as getting feedback from those disability leaders on the issues that are most important to the disability community in their state, and making sure that the presidential candidates are aware of those issues.
Thank you so much, Justin. We really appreciate the work you all are doing. Have you all ready, or could I ask you to put the Respectability website on the Facebook page or on the Yahoo group so that people can see that and have access to it?
Hopefully don't do that.
This is Diane. I just wanted to let people know that there's some questions and a response in the chat that I'd like to share whenever people are ready.
Oh, go ahead, Dan. I think it's a good time.
Okay. And I had actually tried to break in a couple times to discover that my mute function on my phone is in addition to your mute function, and I have to unmute twice in order to get there. But anyway, I apologize for the delay in getting the questions up there. The first is, I'm new to advocacy and just discovered at the last peer support meeting I held that 9 out of 10 of my participants do not vote and feel their vote doesn't matter. These are individuals with developmental disabilities. What suggestions can I use to get them voting? And then individual responded with several good suggestions as follows. One, yes, more voter registration and all the time, just not just before an election. Two, continuing to advocate for more accessible polling centers. Three, better training of staff at polls. For example, how to use Braille, the Braille polls, or communication with deaf voters, or clarifying the right of people with intellectual disabilities to vote. Four, training for people with disabilities on their right to vote and why to vote. Maybe wordless or easy read format for people with intellectual disabilities. Five, look at laws that may be making it harder to vote, such as guardianship for people with intellectual or psychosocial disabilities. And then another question that came up is, why has nobody ever tried to issue a report card on how legislators voted on key issues? Many other organizations have similar report cards that try to hold legislators accountable. And then another person goes, I'm not the person who asked about report cards, but I'm wondering if this is one of the things they will be doing or have done at Respectability USA. So I think the report card question is kind of still hanging out there.
Hi, this is Michelle. I'm so sorry, you guys. I had trouble getting off mute earlier. I guess I can speak to the report card issue a little bit. I did want to say the earlier question about timing and using social media and all that. I don't think that we've leveraged social media very well, but it's been very hard. A big part of a social media push is getting things to trend on Twitter, and getting our issues to trend has been really difficult simply because we need the people to do it. They need to get on social media, they need to use it actively, and they need to commit to getting things to go viral and getting things to trend. We can put it all we want, but if it doesn't go viral and it doesn't trend, then it doesn't really have an impact. So there needs to be a national community-wide commitment to making that more of a reality. On the issue of report cards are doable, but they fall into a little bit of a tricky area in terms of 501c3 activities. Report cards that actually rate or score how well you've done, you know, you get an A or you get a B+ in terms of our issues, are a C4 activity. They're much, much closer to the C4 line. The organizations that I know that do those are not typically 501c3 organizations. Really, you're at that point going to be getting into electioneering if you're talking about people who are actively candidates and you're ranking them. You can do scorecards that just show how votes went down in terms of who voted yes and no on certain issues, and that should be an allowable activity, and those have been done before. It's not on a broader scale, and I think the issue with that is more we could do that on the national level, but those are really, really effective at the state and local level when you're talking about your state legislatures. Whatever's happening with an issue like healthcare at the national level, it's fallen to the states to participate in things like Medicaid exchanges. And if the state legislatures are not willing to play ball, that has a huge impact on the lives of people with disabilities. So I sometimes think that those types of things have more of an impact at the state and local level, and they are being done in some places. But if they're not being done at all, then I guess it's just on us to get the word out that these are the types of activities you can do. I have seen those. I've seen voter guides based on candidate questionnaires on disability-specific issues and candidate forums, all of which I think are really, really effective at the state and local levels. And once we get to the national level, I think some of their effectiveness is diluted, but it's certainly something we can think about.
And this is Terry. I'm hoping that we can build on the report that National Disability Rights Network and we did for the National Council on Disability in 2012, when we started to identify architectural technology and physical barriers to voting. So maybe we can put some organization to that and the social media as well.
Can I make a comment? This is Helen again.
You can make a really quick comment. This is Jessica. Unfortunately, I realize we're at the hour, so I'm going to have to wrap up. So you get the last word.
Okay. How can I make this comment? The ADA 25 Celebrate was a test project. It was done within a four-month period of time. I request people to review that to see, as an individual, the amount of views that I got without soliciting, especially on Twitter. So I am saying social media is viable. It's how you go about doing it. I might be able to give insight to that because as an IT expert, a digital media expert, and a PR and a disabilities advocate, I do have a lot of information in regards to things I've done as an individual to help in these areas of cost-effective media.
Great. Well, thank you for that. This is Jessica, and I'm going to have to end our call. Unfortunately, there is so much rich dialogue happening here that I really hope we can continue some of this on the Yahoo group and on the Facebook page. We will also have a recording of the call and the transcript up on the National Disability Leadership Alliance website. Again, that's disabilityleadership.org. And thank you to the Center for Disability Rights in Rochester, New York, for making the recording happen and the website getting that on there. So most of all, huge thanks to Michelle Bishop and Derek Wetherill and all of our participants for sharing such important ideas and insights and information about what we can all do in our communities. Hopefully we'll be able to work together more and be really effective in turning out people with disabilities in the 2016 presidential election and every other election. We will have a call again next month, third Tuesday, same time. We don't yet have a topic, so if somebody has an idea, please email me. What am I forgetting? Thanks to our captioner as well. Oh, and the other thing I'm forgetting, we didn't do introductions on this call because we had so many people. We had about 50 people, and so that was really great. But we do want to know who you all are and be able to keep up. So if you haven't already, there's a link to a registration form that should be in the email that you got about this call. Please do click on that and just enter your basic information. It'll take you about a minute. And on that note, I think we are done. So thanks again to everybody, and have a great day.